The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Ben Jarofsky Show for Wednesday, March 29th starts now. On today's show, Ben welcomes back Monroe Anderson for Monroe Wednesdays and also Tiffany Walden, Editor-in-Chief of The Tribe. The Ben Jarofsky Show brought to you in part by SEIU Healthcare Illinois Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, the Chicago Teachers Union, and Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. What to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, so much more. If you like columns from Ben Jarofsky, just head on over to ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Abortion Ruling Delay Wednesday, and here's why. All right, so we're going to do the deep dive. We're going to do some political Chicago talk. Don't worry, but ladies and gentlemen, I got Tiffany Walden and Monroe Anderson holding by to take the deep dive on all the Ballas and Johnson, Chicago mayoral election stuff that has just been gripping the city and gripping my brain for like the last 3 months. I just have to do a follow-up from yesterday's show. Terry Cosgrove's on the show. TC, shout out, and one of the leading abortion rights activists in the state of Illinois. We're talking about abortion as an issue in the Chicago mayoral race. Personal PAC has endorsed Brandon Johnson. They do not believe that Paul Vallas will stand tall for abortion rights. And we also talked about the showdown in Wisconsin where the state Supreme Court seat is at. Oh, my goodness. It's a MAGA candidate versus essentially a liberal Democrat, and abortion rights will be essentially on the ballot there as well as gerrymandering and the future of Congress. We talk so much in Chicago about the mayor's race, but that Supreme Court seat battle in Wisconsin is so pivotal to so much that's going down in this country. But one thing that Terry did not say when he was on the show, and we talked about after the show. Yes, I do an after the show conversation with my guests. I obsessively talk about politics all day and all night. He said, there is a decision. Right now, we're waiting there for a decision on the so-called abortion pill from a federal judge in Texas. And that federal judge about, 2 weeks ago, said any day now he was going to issue his a ruling on whether he would have an injunction essentially barring the pill. Nobody could have it. I don't care if you're in Texas, where it's an anti-abortion MAGA running the state, or a liberal Illinois with J.B. Pritzker running the state. Nobody would have access to the pill if he imposes this injunction. After the show, Terry sent me this email. Do you think the judge is impartial? Anyone with a single brain cell can figure out how he's going to rule, but he won't announce his decision before the April 4th Wisconsin Supreme Court race because the right-wingers are scared to death about the public and voter reaction to eliminating this widely supported, extremely safe and effective medication that is taken in the privacy of a woman's home. The right-wingers completely underestimated the political backlash they received to overturning Roe last June, and they know the backlash to this Texas judge ruling will also be swift and mighty by pro-choice voters across the country. And the last place they want to be felt is in Wisconsin's Supreme Court race. The judge is in on the fix, and I bet his ruling will come down after the April 4th voting in the Wisconsin Supreme Court election. He may even do it within an hour of the polls closing on April 4th. And then from the New York Times story, the judge is a Trump appointee who has written critically about Roe v. Wade and who previously worked for a Christian conservative legal organization in Texas. So thank you very much, Terry Cosgrove. I think you have a very compelling point there. They learned their lesson, MAGA did. When they came out with their ruling on Roe, eviscerating Roe, in the summer leading right up to the November elections. And as a result, the Dems held the Senate, should have taken Congress, but those dimwitted Dems in New York are so bad at drawing a map that they somehow or other lost New York, as I say all the time on this show. Chris Welch, if only Chris Welch was running the show in New York with the Democrats, he knows how to draw a map. All right, without further ado, I'm going to shift my attention to, by the way, and Terry Cosgrove, one last point. If that ruling came down today, I would love to watch Paul Vallis ducking and dodging on the issue of whether he's going to stand with the woman's right to have those pills, or whether he's going to say, well, I don't know. I'm fundamentally opposed to abortion. Be interesting how much ducking and dodging and dancing we'd see from Paul Vallis. All right. Without further ado, I'm going to bring on my distinguished guest. It's Wednesday, so Monroe Anderson is with us, and also joining us is editor of the Tribe, Tiffany Walden. Every now and then, Monroe and I, let's go, you know what? It's Senior Citizen Day at the Ben Jarofsky Show. We got to bring a young person on. And so, Tiffany Walden, thank you very much for joining us. Before we take the deep dive on all the great Tribe coverage, guys have been on a freaking roll. A roll. For the last month, shout out to the Tribe, all the reporters and editors, Monroe, and the Monroe has offered up a column as well. I have to relate a conversation we had before we went on the air, because I must get this on the record, Tiffany Walden. So I went to the doctors this morning. Everything was okay. Thank you. And by chance, I was having a conversation. Monroe's already heard this story twice, with the clerk who brought me in. You know, they took my information. There were two clerks sitting at their computers. And this one clerk mentioned that he used to live in Los Angeles, but he hated it because he hated driving. All right, Tiffany. So I said, baby boomer that I am, I go, LA is a great big freeway. Put $100 down and buy a car. In a week, maybe two, they'll make you a star. And then I stood back and smiled, like, figure, and they go, wow, that's an impressive display of memory, old man. Great job. But they gave me that blank look, Tiffany, like I was speaking Polish or something. Like they didn't understand what I was saying. And then I go, well, you know that song, don't you? And the two of them are like, smiling, like, man, where do we get this weirdo? And I go, Dionne Warwick. And they said, we don't know who Dionne Warwick is. I went into the doctor's office, the doctor and the nurse. I said, do you know who Dionne Warwick is? They didn't know.
Oh, no.
So
yeah, there's a real good documentary out on her right now, actually.
Yeah.
I
think only baby boomers are watching that documentary. So, Tiffany, I must ask you, you're a millennial. You're not of the baby boomer generation. Do you know who Dionne Warwick is?
Absolutely. And I am shocked, appalled, and disappointed that they did not know who Dionne Warwick is. It is a rite of passage in Chicago, especially in Chicago as a Black person, to know who Dionne Warwick is. If you grew up at all listening to V103, to Herb Kent, to anything, if you had parents at all that cared about music, if you care at all about music, you need to absolutely know who Dionne Warwick is, what she's achieved, who she is as a Black woman in music, and as a pop star, one of the first pop stars that we have, that she's related to Leontine Price, that she's related to Whitney Houston and Sissy Houston. Why don't we know these things?
Wow. Tiffany, that was a deep dive I wasn't expecting. But yes, everything you said is absolutely true. And my explanation, Tiffany Monroe, and I hate to say this, bad parenting. Bad parenting, okay? These four individuals, all outstanding clerks, doctors, and nurses, do a great job. They were not raised right.
They were listening to Pat Boone.
Pat Boone.
They were listening to the cover artist instead of the real deal.
Well, we were just talking about that. There's debatable, actually, who does the best version of Walk On By. Is it Isaac Hayes? Is it Dionne Warwick? Who does the best version of I Say a Little Prayer? Is it Aretha Franklin or is it Dionne Warwick? We could have a whole discussion on this today, but we got to get back to Chicago politics, ladies and gentlemen.
Let me just add, I do blame parenting, and I also blame that we don't have critical race theory in school, because if we did, we would also be able to talk about why they don't know who Dionne Warwick is, because she did not have the opportunity to be celebrated in her time.
If Paul Vallis is victorious, they'll have Dionne Warwick education in Chicago public schools the way they have Rosa Parks education in the Florida public schools. They'll go, they will not be allowed to mention that Dionne Warwick is a black woman. Dionne Warwick was an outstanding singer.
Right. Completely erase everything.
Oh, my goodness. I'm just kidding, Paul Vallis. That was just a joke. Okay, come on. All right. Why don't we start with critical race theory, Tiffany? I mean, I told you that we're going to take it down through all the tribes, great scoops, and we'll talk about Paul Vallis, the charter school Paul Vallis, and we'll also talk about this is an excellent article in the tribe about black endorsements of Paul Vallis and the historical significance of that. But it was interesting, critical race theory, last night's debate, when hit with a hard question about it, about his comments, which are so bizarre. I mean, I don't know how to interpret the weirdness. I can't even explain how weird it was, the riff Paul Vallis went on in that interview a couple years ago or a year ago or so with Wire Points, the conservative right-wing outfit on critical race theory. But last night when asked about it, he denied that he said it, which is, wow, that's... I can understand he'd be embarrassed by it, but go ahead, Tiffany.
You said he denied that he said, I didn't see the debate last night. He denied that he said.
Well, yeah, he was like, I never said that. You know, it's. I'm like, okay, whatever. So how serious, I'll start with you, Tiffany, and then Monroe, you respond. How serious do you take the response Paul Vallis had to the critical race question that was posed to him on the Wire Points interview? And it's if you, anybody, we talked about it in the show a lot. You can find it on the internet. You can hear Paul Vallis explain how, in his humble opinion, if you teach critical race theory, white kids will not listen to their parents because they'll rebel against them, and it'll black kids will. It'll be like one step another, and they'll end up as criminals somehow or other if they are exposed to the history of race relations in our country. Tiffany, your take on all this.
Well, first, Paul Vallis seems to be doing a lot of backpedaling. He's on tape talking about being a Republican, and then now all of a sudden he's a Democrat, has been a lifelong Democrat. All his commercials is about him being a lifelong Democrat. So, you know, at this point, I really don't know, you know, what to even believe. He's on tape having a conversation about critical race theory. How can you deny that you said that? And one of the reasons why critical race theory, even though it's not even something that's going to be like implemented in lower grades, this is like a college level thing that we're talking about. But so much of the things that we have today stand on what Black, Brown, and Indigenous people have worked and fought hard for since, you know, we've been on this land. Even thinking about Paul Vallis, we have an opinion piece from Elizabeth Todd Breland that I'm so happy that she wrote something and submitted it to us, where she talks about how in the 50s and 60s, the civil rights organizers wanted to make that connection between the democratic vision of public education as a public good. And they worked hard to make that a reality for Black communities. So even back then, Black and brown folks who were fighting for civil rights were pushing to desegregate schools and to make schools equal. And in Chicago, so many of our schools were under-resourced, overcrowded. on the South and West sides. And so those are the same things that we're fighting for today. So to deny critical
back in the 60s, they had the Willis wagons. Mm-hmm. Rather than build new schools, they came up with these trailers to put kids in so that they could keep the schools segregated.
Right.
Yeah, the Willis wagons of the early 60s. Yeah, I take it one step further with the critical race theory is the hammer that Republicans use against Democrats to kind of like scare white voters. But Vallis, if you take a look at what Vallis, the programs he implemented in the 90s, high stakes testing. He's a big believer in high stakes testing. And if you listen to those comments, so high stakes testing mean you're given, the students are all given standardized tests. All kids are given standardized tests. They're supposed to be barometers of where a kid is in school. So you can work with the student, the teacher, parents can work with the student on weaknesses, et cetera, and so forth. But under Vallis and Chico and Daley back in the late 90s and early 00s, they were used as gatekeepers. So if you weren't at a certain level, kids would be held back. Vallis is very proud of that. He's very proud of like holding back thousands of kids. And, like, that was a great achievement. Then Chicago has gone in a different direction, Tiffany, as a result, because the dropout rate was so high. You start holding kids back, that's like, leads to higher dropout. It's like kids get frustrated. Oh, I'm no good. School's not for me. I suck, blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, it's all the research shows that we have a higher dropout. So we relaxed the pressure on these tests. They're no longer gatekeepers. Dropout rate falls. Mayors pat themselves on the back. Now here comes Vallis in that interview where he was ripping critical race theory, saying part of the problem is we spend too much time teaching things like history. We should be I'm sorry, man. I can't help but laugh. It's so depressing on one level. You got to laugh. Do you follow what I'm saying? This is like, instead of teaching history, you're going to cram and learn your math tables, long division.
It's so interesting. Because it's just like, I mean, we all been kids before, and I've been a kid in Chicago, and kids have different strengths. Like, I remember taking, I forget the name of the, it was like a pre-ACT test that we took in high school, and it was supposed to tell you like what your like what area of study that you would excel in.
And
mine obviously was like, you know, history and writing. It was not math. It was not science. And to this day, you know, I'm in a career that reflects that. You know, I'm not a mathematician. I'm not a scientist by any means. So, you know, by Paul Vallis's judgment, I'm a terrible student, right? Because I can't do math. I can't do science. So I shouldn't even, there shouldn't have been a pathway for me to even succeed. I probably should have been in a military school, honestly, because those two subjects aren't a strong suit. So you can't force every kid to be, a STEM student or some kids are good at that. And some kids are in environments where, they have the resources to be good at that and to thrive at it. But discrediting students who may have interests in other things and not providing resources and a pathway for them to succeed in those industries is a disservice. Two kids, and it's very targeted to a certain demographic of kids.
Yeah, and I'll go one step further. Monroe, you can weigh in on this too. And I'm speaking, maybe this is a generational thing, but most of the people the kids who were held back in the late 90s were Black kids. And so it was like a punitive measure sort of against Black kids. Many of the white parents that were raising kids at the same time I was would never want this for their children. So like if you went to a private school, if you went to Latin or Parker or any of the private schools, the lab school, they're not imposing high stakes testing on those kids. And they wouldn't tolerate it. The revolt in the public schools of Chicago, what limited revolt there was to this, was at Whitney Young High School. I remember back in the early '00s, and there was a lot of white kids at Whitney Young who were leading the revolt. One of whom comes on this show, or at least his older brother was part of the revolt, Miles Conflasson. So Monroe, you know this, you're the same age. We were raising kids at the same time. You know, parents, like upper class parents, resisted this kind of high stakes testing for their kids.
You know, what's interesting to me, I went to Indiana University public school from Gary to Bloomington in the mid 60s. And their policy at that time was to try and flunk us out as quickly as possible because of public schools, so they had to take us. But then I was in an advanced class in journalism in my freshman year. And when it was time to grade us for our score, there was this Mexican kid and myself who had an average of 84. And the professor said, well, since this was an advanced class, that 80 wouldn't be where the B's were, it'd be 85. And so we got C's in the class. We got two with 84, right? And so, you know, in the meantime, I've since learned that if you go to an Ivy League school,
yeah,
they will go through hoops, bend over backwards to make sure that you're successful.
Yeah.
Because if they accepted you, they wanted to show their great judgment in accepting you. So they didn't flunk you out unless they just absolutely positively had to.
Yeah. No, we'll move on. I just want to point out, Paul Vallis, that your boss, the man you love, Richard Daley, that guy struggled with tests. In fact, Del Marie was on the show last time. She still was questioning whether Daley took his own law bar, the law bar.
Yeah, Cecil Partee.
Cecil Partee.
Cecil Partee took it for
her. Hey, Vallis, do an investigation of that, all right? all right, Tiffany. Let's go back. You mentioned military schools. So that's a natural transition to one of the great tribe scoops. I think it was Jim Daley wrote the story. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the story about Paul Vallis's record with charter schools and military school. Man loves military schools. Go ahead.
I'll try to do it justice because Jim just really did some excellent reporting and told a full historical painted a picture of who Paul Vallis is. Essentially, you know, the election, so much of it is a conversation about crime. Jim Daley really takes you through the conversation around the direction of CPS and what the future of the public schools in Chicago would be, and that's in jeopardy with this particular election, where you have someone like Paul Vallis who is definitely behind you know, school choice and expanding open enrollment and charter schools. And he's even right now the CEO of a new military school that's opening in Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas. And one of the things that kind of triggered this story for us was earlier in the campaign trail, Paul Vallis was at the Women's Take Action Alliance mayoral forum on March 11th. And both candidates were asked about how they would recruit more women to CPD. And Paul Vallis specifically started touting the ROTC program. And, you know, he said the way that you recruit in a diversified way is really simple. We have 10,000 young people in the ROTC programs. I opened up 7 military and first responder high schools in Chicago. We can provide a direct pipeline from the ROTC programs to CPD. And Chalkbeat had did an investigation in 2021 that showed that 9 of the predominantly black and brown schools had automatically enrolled students into JRTC programs without their knowledge or consent. So it's another form of this, you know, school to, you know, I don't know, criminal justice type of pipeline where, you know, without students' consent, it's just automatically kind of brainwashing you to join the police department or to be some sort of law enforcement figure. And when you look at these schools and how they've been implemented in other cities, like Louisiana, like New Orleans or Philadelphia, so much of it is oppressive to students. Like in the story, one of the teachers was talking about how the students had to walk in a file line in a style that they call it a chicken wing, where they had to walk with their hands behind their backs. Another teacher described that, you know, if a student didn't excel at the charter school, they wouldn't necessarily expel them, but they would just tell them they had to go home. And then you don't know what happened to that student after that. They're no longer a student at the charter school, but they're just kind of in the abyss. Like, you don't know where they are, and there's no tracking system for them. So much of this is important for Chicago voters to take a look at and to understand that this is the type of school system that Paul Vallas is trying to create here in Chicago, and has been, according to his record, already putting steps in place to implement this type of system in Chicago. And where does that leave Black and brown kids who may not fit within this super strict conservative system that he's trying to put together?
Low expectations. That's what it is. It's like, well, these kids are not that smart. They're not that talented, except in basketball or something. Mm-hmm. And so we will steer them to where they can accomplish something.
Mm-hmm.
Monroe, were you ever tempted to join the military when you were a kid in Gary and thinking about your future?
My father had been in the military and was, you know, proud of his service. He didn't encourage it, but when I was a freshman at Indiana University, I took ROTC. And I took it because I was thinking, well, I should see what it's like. I hated it. I did my freshman year. You had to wear a uniform, one or 2 days, whatever the class was. Mm-hmm. I had to wear this uniform. I had this officer, you know, because students were upperclassmen were officers, and this guy was about 5'2", and he was looking up at me and giving me these orders, and they didn't feel right to me. You know, I thought it was more than just, I got a racist tone somewhere. And I didn't even, because I'd grown up in Gary in a segregated neighborhood, I didn't know much about integration whatsoever. You know, this is my first time getting to know white people. And then I had a debate class while in ROTC, and we were debating the American way of government, the Constitution, versus the Russian. God, I forgot what it's called now. Little Red, the Russian Constitution. I forgot what it's called. Maybe it was the China. But anyway, it was communist. Mm-hmm. And I read both, I read both of them in preparation for this debate. And I got assigned the communist position against this white boy who was like pre-MAGA. But the thing is, because I read it, and on paper, both of them were equal. You know, they're all highfalutin or what have you. I kicked his butt in the debate. And so my professor, who was a career Air Force man, I was in the Air Force ROTC, he looked at me like I was a communist. And that's when I decided, well, military life definitely is not for me.
Yeah. I think that this is a popular issue for Vallas in this election, and I really want to hear your thoughts on this, Tiffany. I go to Bulls games, I go to football games, and there's always that moment where a serviceman or servicewoman stands before the crowd and they announce whatever their background is, wherever they served, and invariably there's an ovation often a standing ovation. Let's honor them for their service. And, you know, most people in this country do not serve in the military. We did away with the draft.
Yeah, only 2 or 3%
now. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But I don't know if it's guilt or whatever, but there's tremendous respect accorded to people who have served when we get to these games, football games, basketball games, et cetera. And I remember in the Vallis years with the ROTC programs, and then Artie Duncan as well, when he turned Senn High School, he put the military academy in Senn High School on the north side, and north side parents were up in arms, and he put it in there anyway. And he goes, this may not be for you, but I believe in military service for some kids. Some kids love it, and we have to respect them. They turn into this patriotism thing. So my guess is there's going to be a strong contingent of people who go, yeah, I like Vallis. Put those kids in the military. Give them some discipline, and they won't be stealing cars. You know, somehow or other, that would be the correlation. So that it may pick them up votes. Your thoughts about this, Tiffany?
It's a really nuanced conversation. I mean, I have service members in my family. My grandfather served in the Korean War in the Navy. And, you know, I have a cousin who's in the Air Force. He's getting out right now. I have an uncle who's in the Air Force. And so this sentiment that you send people off to the military to get some discipline, we need to unpack how harmful that is to Black kids. My cousin, for example, only went to the Air Force because you know, he wasn't really good at school. He liked to draw. He wanted to be an animator. In fact, that was his dream. And I fought really, really hard to help him get into one of the best like art schools down in Georgia. And his dad would not let him go to the art school because in his mind, he needed discipline. And in his mind, he was indoctrinated to think that way. In his mind, it was like, you know, if you're not going to have what is deemed a satisfactory job, drawing is not a satisfactory job. Anything creative is not a satisfactory job. You need to go into the military. That's all you can do. I'm not paying for you to go to art school. And, you know, we're all in our 30s now, and I still see today the impact of that decision that his dad made on him and him having to try to navigate, still having an urge to be a creative because that's in him. He still draws to this day. But, you know, his everything about his social skills, everything about the indoctrination of what the military teaches you, he's grappling with that and trying to shed that so that he can come back into civilian life and be whole. He's not whole right now.
Is he in the military right now?
He is. He is in the military right now, and he decided to leave, so he's leaving in a couple of months. But he's been in there since right out of high school. Like, so he's been in there for about 10 plus years. And it was a very big decision for him to decide to leave the military because he was just like, you know, I don't know who I am without this now. When he used to know who he was, he used to know what his passions were. And now, you know, there's a lot of therapy and stuff that needs to happen to help him be whole again. So I think, you know, we do have respect for our elders who were in the military. For a lot of them, they didn't have a choice. For a lot of them, you know, it was also maybe they did have a choice and that was what they wanted to do. For a lot of them, it was a way to be upwardly mobile economically and socially. But for a lot of people younger, like my generation, even Gen X generation, this idea that you sending people off to the military so that they can find discipline.
Right.
We need to do away with that. And I think with Paul Vallis and these militarized schools, these JROTC programs, a lot of kids get into these programs because it's at school. You might need the credit. Some of these schools require you to have that credit. I have a cousin who went to a school, who went to Proviso West, that took the Navy JROTC program. And when he was in the Navy JROTC program, he thought he wanted to go to the military too. And that's not him at all. You know, he was just like, maybe I could do that because what else am I going to do? So I don't know what they're teaching people because we didn't have JROTC at my school, but people do come out of these programs thinking that is the thing that they can do. I'm not academic. I'm not really great at school, but I can go directly from JROTC into whether that's the Navy, the Air Force, or the Army, depending on which program is at your school. And that needs to be unpacked, what that does emotionally to a young kid. Yeah.
Well, being in the arts is a very middle class and above thing. And for a lot of us who are working class or worse, then we don't realize that that's a route because it doesn't automatically make money.
Yep.
But it can be quite satisfactory. My younger son Kyle is an artist, and he was drawing when he was three, and on up. But when he was in high school, he was depressed for different reasons, and when he turned 21. And his mother Joyce found this drawing of Samuel Jackson that was incredible. It looked like a photograph. It was so well done. And he hadn't had any training. So when he was 21, still depressed and not knowing what he was going to do, I pulled him aside and I told him, I said, "You're an artist. I said, this is what you can do. This is how you should think of yourself. 2 years from now, you can change your mind and be something else, whatever you want to be. But right now, this is what you do. This is what you love to do. So this is what you should do." And today, he's a relatively successful artist. He's illustrated one computer game, and he's working on another now. And he's children's books. He is an artist. Yeah. But again, it's a middle-class pursuit. And for Vallis to be trying to steer kids into the military because they haven't realized what they want to do or that they can do other things is comparable to the right wingers complaining if parents let their kids decide on their sexual preference at a young age. You know, people are who they are, and sometimes they know it very early. Sometimes they have to work at it for a little while.
And you have to think about, like, you know, the opportunities that you have as a child, because, you know, comparing a Black child growing up in Inglewood or in North Lawndale to a white child that, you know, maybe growing up in Winnetka, you know, what access do you have to different things to figure out what you want to do?
Right.
You know,
right.
Like I went to Providence St. Mel, which is a private school. But even at that school, you know, there wasn't a wealth of resources for us to try to, you know, figure out if we wanted to do, you know, different things. But I did have a teacher that realized that I was a writer and like took me under her wing and was like, "This is what we're going to work on. This is what we're going to do." And she pushed me toward different programs to help me understand what journalism was, because I didn't know what journalism was. You know, there's kids that, you know, if you're into different instruments or played it like rugby or different sports and stuff, we don't have rugby in the hood. You have like, what is it? Lacrosse. I didn't know. I had never heard of lacrosse until I went to Northwestern. And I only found out because they was giving away Chick-fil-A. No, they were giving away Chipotle. I'm sorry. Whenever they would win a game, they would give out Chipotle. So I was like, Chipotle, let me go to this. Like, let me figure out what this is. You know, but like, you can't figure out what it is that you want to do unless you have access to it. It was kids in my dorm that were like rowing. They were like in the rowing, on the rowing team. And I'm like, what is the rowing team? You know, like, if you, you can't even imagine what you may be good at unless you have that access to try different things. And in the hood, like every day, it's just like, I'm trying to survive. I can't get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go to Lake Michigan and do a rowing club. Like, I'm literally just trying to make it. So it's manipulative to put these programs, these military programs in schools where you know kids don't have access to different things and resources, nor do they have the mental capacity sometimes to even think about what they want to do when they grow up, because they're just trying to survive every single day, and then like push them towards the military.
And in many, too many instances, the adults are telling them they're not worth anything.
Yep.
You know, they're devaluing them, telling them because they haven't figured out who they are or what their talent is. And so they tell them, like, you know, you're worthless, basically.
Yeah. I just don't know if voters are going to make their decision based on the things we're saying. I agree with absolutely everything Tiffany and Monroe said. That story you told Monroe about your son was just a great story. I know the kid. He's a wonderful, just a great kid. And the mother, ladies and gentlemen, is a great artist. Okay, so the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Joyce Owens is a great artist. And I feel like I've been preaching this for 40 years of writing in the city of Chicago. And then I'm like, I confront voters who go, you know, you gotta teach them discipline. We gotta send them in the military. And I'm like, I'll tell you what, let's cut a deal. Let's make sure we have an art teacher and a drama teacher in every single high school in the city of Chicago for every military school we open. Right. We cut that deal? No, they never cut that deal. The teachers went on strike, Tiffany and Monroe, for more nurses and social workers and counselors in 2019, and the powers that be in the city of Chicago told them to shut up and take the raise and go back to the classroom. And now here we are, Chicago's like so eager to elect this guy Paul Vallis, who wants to bring back high stakes testing, minimize the importance of history, minimize the importance of history, diminishes critical race theory or any discussion of racism and discrimination in this country as some kind of weird brainwashing that's going to turn black kids into criminals. This is what he said, ladies and gentlemen. This is what the man you want to vote for said. And I'm listening to you guys. What you're saying is so true. But it's like Chicago's ready to go, put them in the military. Otherwise, they'll steal our cars. Go ahead, Monroe.
Well, in the piece that I, the latest opinion piece I've written for the Tribe, I call Vallis out. The man is a MAGA man light. he's not a hardcore MAGA man. I mean, he's not like DeSantis or Abbott, where he's just really off the charts with the crazy stuff. But he is flirting with MAGA ideas and practicing MAGA ideas. I mean, when you talk about the education program, you know, and the thing that's interesting is that Vallis is no expert in education. I mean, he's BS'd his way through it, you know, and he does good PR, but that's not his background. Yeah. And even in being in education, he has been basically a bean counter. Mm. But he didn't count the beans very well, because the school systems he was in had a large deficit after he got fired from them or ran out after them. Yeah. Richie Daley was not happy with him when they parted ways at all. The Philadelphia school system wasn't happy with him when he parted ways there. And New Orleans wasn't happy with him. But he keeps what he's done is he's built a reputation for himself that he lives off of, and he hoodwinks people with. And he's come up with some ideas, some radical, some not bad, but if he were to grade him, he'd get a C.
That's a generous grade, Monroe. All right. So that's social promotion, in my humble opinion. We'll close it down the tribe segment of our show. And shout out to The Tribe, Tiffany Walden's publication, outstanding coverage, in my humble opinion, of the mayoral race, one article after another. And Tonya Hill, shout out of shout outs. So let me just start with this. Senator Durbin came out for Paul Vallis. And I have to admit that caught me off guard.
Yeah, me too.
I really caught me off guard, Monroe. I was like, wow, why are you usually generally thought as a liberal Democrat? Don't live in Chicago. This is not your base. If you're not going to endorse the candidate endorsed by the Chicago Teachers Union, which supports Democrats every single time. Okay? So whenever Democrats need the vote to get elected, they turn to the Chicago Teachers Union or SEIU.
Except the thing is,
wait, let me finish. Okay. They don't turn to the Fraternal Order of Police.
Yeah.
If Democrats were dependent on the Fraternal Order of Police to get elected in any state, in any city, or nationwide, they would lose.
Right.
So Durbin, who belongs to the party that always looks to the teachers for support, when it's a teacher union candidate up, goes, no, I'm going to go with Paul Vallis for the Fraternal Order of Police. And that caught me off guard, Tiffany and Monroe. It caught me off guard. And my theory is that Jesse White's endorsement of Paul Vallis opened the gates.
Yeah.
Opened the gates for Richard Durbin to stab the teachers union in the back. And you know what? Thanks a lot for nothing, Durbin. Because I know every single Democrat is going to be looking for the teachers union support. They're going to look for SEIU support, because all these unions, other unions who've supported Vallis, are nowhere to be found when push comes to shove, Tiffany Wallen, in Michigan races, Wisconsin races, Philadelphia races, Pennsylvania races, Florida, down the line. You can't find the Fraternal Order of Police on the front lines for Democrats. They weren't there for Raphael Warnock down in Atlanta. Oh, everybody's talking, oh, my goodness, the Democrats elected Raphael Warnock. They always go, thank you, black women. Mm-hmm. what unions do you think the black women are in, Richard Durbin?
Okay, I can remember when police unions and forces didn't like guns. The idea of everybody, they wanted gun control, because if everybody can have a gun, then they can shoot cops. And I can remember when they were against these automatic weapons or what have you, but the MAGA movement, or the right wing, the NRA movements, some movement has pushed them into that other camp where now they don't like guns, but they don't dislike them either. You know, they're neutral at the best.
Yeah, no, they're interesting.
Let me ask y'all before I check out, Pritzker. What does it mean that Pritzker isn't saying anything?
Well, I'll definitely take the deep dive in that. But before I do, I want to get your response to what I said. The because it was The Tribe that wrote the story, sort of like dissecting, deconstructing. And I urge everybody to read the story. Black politicians' endorsement of Vallis. So why don't you sort of summarize the issues raised in that article, Tiffany, and then address what I said, that there are pivotal endorsements, because in my humble opinion, that led to Durbin feeling free to endorse Vallis. Go ahead.
I felt the same way about the Jesse White endorsement, because he's so beloved in the black community with the Tumblrs program, and he's been in office since I can remember, since I was born. You know, he has that picture at the Secretary of State or at all the DMVs, and you think that that's him until you realize, you know, he's a much older, you know, man. So he's
that's him 30 years ago.
But he's such a fixture in our community that I feel that, you know, it was a good strategy on Vallis's part to get Jesse White to endorse him, because then, you know, any, you know, white politician who comes in behind Jesse White and endorses him, they won't look like a racist. You know, it's hard for you to to critique them as being a racist, like we're critiquing violence in some instances, when you have a Black man who's beloved in the Black community endorsing him as well. So it just gave them the pat on the back to say, okay, like, you know, I can endorse him too. And then you got, you know, all the other, the Willie Wilsons, you got Jamal Green, which we have a whole TikTok series episode about Jamal Green, if y'all haven't checked it out. All of these people, especially a Jamal Green, who used to be a progressive, a Sophia King, all the woman Sophia King, who is the quote unquote chair of the progressive caucus. Like, these people are supporting Paul Vallis as well, because it's an idea about the status quo and what, how can we be a part of maintaining the status quo and maintaining business as usual. And in that story that Tonya Hill so excellently reported on, experts talk about that as, you know, Vallis has suddenly become the savior of Chicago, and not turning, you know, his history, as Monroe mentioned, of failures across the country, not seeing that as something that needs to be studied and critiqued. So it has to be a much, you know, bigger game here of, you know, how can we maintain the status quo of Chicago, where you have the opponent, which is Brandon Johnson, who is connecting the dots of, if I solve the root causes of crime, which is what grassroots organizers have been pushing for, if we solve the roots of crime, and then at that point we might solve the gun violence issue here. We might reduce violence. We might reduce the number of people in poverty. People will have an equal standing in this city, but no one wants to do that. People are profiting off of the gun violence. People don't want to say that, but they're profiting off of it. Media is profiting off of it. Ken Griffin is profiting off of it. All of these people are making money off of X amount of Black people have been killed in Chicago on this day. So yeah, people don't want to let go of what's always been, and Paul Vallis represents that. Whereas, you know, Brandon Johnson represents change and hope and trying to solve these root issues of violence and crime.
Well, and the other thing is, Vallis has pretended to be a liberal. That I mean, you know, up until the past few years, I mean, he's always presented himself as a liberal, or at least left of center. Maybe not a liberal, but at least left to center. So a Durbin is comfortable with him because he's known him, and he's always sort of presented himself as a liberal. And he may be, who knows? I don't know what Dallas is. But I know that he's been acting like he wants to go MAGA and be MAGA in the last 3 or 4 years, at least.
Well, the best analysis I've heard on this, I'm going to shout out to Keena Collins, will be on the show tomorrow. Durbin doesn't want anything to do with the defunder label.
Right.
And Brandon Johnson has been linked to the defund the police label, and National Democrats are petrified of that.
But why? Why are they petrified of it? Because the defunder label is not solely about the police. It is about addressing the root causes of crime. People are saying, reallocate this ballooning CPD budget, this $1.9 billion CPD budget, which, if we have that much money going towards policing, this should be the safest city in the world. The safest city in the world, yet the clearance rates on crimes committed is abysmal. So reallocating money to addressing mental health problems, to addressing poverty, to addressing homelessness, to addressing the wealth gap between Black and white Chicagoans in the city, people in Garfield Park making $25,000 a year, people in the Gold Coast making upwards $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year. Figure that out and our problems will start to diminish. So why is it that everybody is afraid of what the actual conversation of defund is?
I would love to hear your answer to that question.
Mine?
Yes.
No one, everybody's profiting off of off of crime, and Democrats included. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren were two people that my generation really, really were rooting for, really, really wanted to see them get to the next level and be president. They were championing, for example, getting rid of student loan debt. Everybody should want that, right? You would think everybody would be like, oh yeah, let's get rid of student loan debt. Why is it that that's such a controversial conversation and so many people are against that? And you get the Democrats that's behind Biden come in and say, oh, we'll do that, but then get in office and it's like, actually, like, what if I never said that, or I'll do a light version of that. Yeah. You know, why is it that the people that are against the conversations that are about prevention on all levels, whether that's crime prevention, poverty prevention, whatever the case may be, people that are against that, what are they really, really against? And it's this idea that if Black people had an equal footing in this country, we would be successful. And people would not be able to profit off of our poverty and off of our lack of resources.
Even a lot of the people who are working to change things are basically poverty pimps.
Yep.
They're making money off of them, off of the poor also. Under the guise of, well, we're going to improve things for them. Yeah. We're working overtime to improve things for them.
No, we could have this whole show on why, in my humble opinion, white people are afraid of a competitive, even field with Black people. That's a whole show. And we don't have time for that because Tiffany's got to go back and edit more of those great Tribe articles. But I would start with Denzel Washington not winning the Oscar for Fences. That would be my number one. I still haven't got over that.
Angela Bassett not winning an Oscar for What's Love Got to Do with It.
Well, okay, yeah, but Denzel, America's greatest movie star, in a play, movie based on a play written by America's greatest dramatist, does not win the Oscar. They give it to, I forget the dude's name from Manchester. I still haven't got over that, okay? Love's Got to Do with It is a whole other story. So I'm going to hold on that. I'll just address, you asked a question about JB. I think he's afraid of the defunder label as well. And that's why he stayed. That's my, I don't know that, but that's my guess. Everybody's running from that label, Tiffany. Well,
because, you know, and it's semantics. Because if they had just gone with reform, you wouldn't get quite the backlash.
There would be a backlash. Oh, my good. I understand what you're saying, that the fun is an easy backlash, makes it easier. Right. But I just saw it politically, and this started off with Mayor Lightfoot. Started off with her. Arne Duncan, of all people, raised some issues, which, by the way, he's completely abandoned by endorsing Ballas. But he raised issues. Maybe we should rethink policing in the city of Chicago. Now he's endorsing the guy who wants to put a cop on every block. But for that moment in time, Tiffany, Arne Duncan was like, maybe we should rethink. And he was using this, Monroe, he was talking about running for mayor, and Mayor Lori Lightfoot threw that elbow. And she said, he sounds like a defunder. And the next thing you know, Arne doesn't run, and everybody's calling everybody else a defunder. You're a defunder.
And it's the word that was a problem. Clyburn, when they first did it, Clyburn says, he waved a flag and said, big mistake, you can't do this because I know what these people are going to do. I've been fighting these guys since I was a teenager, so I know how they're going to do this.
All right, so Tiffany's got to go. Tiffany, any last words you want to leave us with? Any promotion of the tribe? Anything? The floor is yours.
Yeah. You know, keep reading The Tribe. It's thetribewithtwoeyes.com. We have a few more election stories coming out. We have an excellent piece from Monroe that is coming out. So or may be out by the time you listen to this. So please just continue to read and educate yourselves and just vote. Please, please vote. Please take somebody to vote. Please get a van and take the whole block to vote. Or just vote.
Exactly. You vote and bring somebody with you
to vote. Yeah, by the way, I need to notice, I remember Lori Lightfoot at some point was said she was going to give interviews with black reporters first. Okay. I remember her saying that. I'm not making this up, Tiffany, because she believed and using whatever she could to help promote the careers of black journalism. Monroe and I, we applauded that on there. Good job, Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Hooray. I'm just wondering, any closeout interviews from Mayor Lori Lightfoot for a black owned and run newspaper called The Tribe? Just curious. Has she given out her last interview with you guys as she walks out of office?
I have a whole other perspective to her giving interviews to black and brown journalists, but that's for another day. But no, we have not. We did reach out when everybody got on Twitter and started saying that they've asked and she hasn't responded. I sent the email asking and I haven't gotten a response at all. It wasn't even like a, oh, hey, like we're not interviewing with people. Like there's just radio silence. So I think CityCast has been trying to get interviews. There's radio silence. We've also tried to get interviews with Paul Vallis. We wanted to interview Vallis and Brandon Johnson for the runoff. We only heard back from Brandon Johnson. We did not hear back from Paul Vallis. Complete radio silence. So, yeah, that tells you everything you need to know.
Get ready for that radio silence if he prevails, because I lived through those daily years. And the daily strategy, if they don't like what you write, they just ignore you. It just, I guess it means you're doing your job. All right, Tiffany, I know you got a lot to do, and Monroe are going to switch to Trump to close it down. So thank you so much, Tiffany, for coming on the show.
Thank y'all for having me. Good to see you, Monroe.
Okay, yeah, same here. And hopefully she'll be back then.
All right, she'll be back. She likes being the young person in the room with the old geezers.
I learn a lot every time.
Take care, Tiffany. All right, Monroe, let's talk a little Trump. And I know I urge everybody to check out the Jim Coogan interview that dropped this weekend. We did the deep dive on Trump's legal troubles in New York. Fascinating job by ace attorney Jim Coogan in breaking it down. The indictment still hasn't come. I'm starting to wonder. Alvin Bragg is getting a little nervous about indicting Trump.
You can take it to the bank. Trump will be indicted at least once, possibly three times, but definitely once.
And he will probably be the Republican nominee while under indictment. I don't know if this tape or this recording will work. I sent it to Chris Visa Instagram. And so, Chris, does the recording work?
Yeah.
That we have?
Yeah.
Oh, it does work. Good to go. Okay. So this is from The Daily Show. And John Leguizamo is the host. I think he's hilarious the way he breaks this down. But this is an excerpt of Donald Trump's speech in the name of the town is Waco, but it was a wacko speech. MAGA, this is your guy. Okay, MAGA, this is your guy. And by the way, Chicago voters, you know, you're kind of leaning in that MAGA direction in this mayoral race. Just saying, MAGA light, as Monroe. So it's kind of this is kind of Linkin Park's guy these days, because I think Linkin Park went 55% for Paul Vallis in the first round. They're probably going with 75%. So, Chris, why don't you play this recording, and then Monroe, you get to riff on Donald Trump. Take it away, Chris.
Let's kick things off with Donald Trump. That's right. The man's so bad at sex, he pays people not to talk about it. Yep. We're still all waiting for the cops to arrest him for lying about his affair with a porn star. But until then, he's continuing his presidential campaign and staying focused on the important issues. like lying about his affair with a porn star.
Former President Trump used his first official campaign rally in Waco, Texas, to denounce the legal threats against him.
People see it's bullshit, and they go and they say, it's unfair. The District Attorney of New York, under the auspices and direction of the Department of Injustice in Washington, D.C., was investigating me for something that is not a crime, not a misdemeanor, not an affair. I never liked horse face. It's just not. That's a terrible thing. That wouldn't be the one. There is no one. We have a great first lady.
Wow. Wow. Nice save, bro. You could actually see his brain try to turn the car around that his mouth was driving. I didn't have an affair, and I've never had an affair, and I actually never had sex. Did you know that? I'm a virgin, and the best and biggest virgin ever. By the way, I do the worst Trump impersonation. I suck at doing Trump.
All right, beautiful. Thank you so much, Chris. Great job, as always. Monroe, it's hilarious on many fronts. Sometimes you just have to laugh at Donald Trump. But I thought the same thing that Leguizamo thought. Trump, his traditional response when accused of assault, rape, etc., is to say, she's not my type, which sort of suggests that if she were his type, he would have raped her. Right. And so in this particular moment, he went right back to that. She's not the one. And then he realized, uh-oh. I am a married man, you know.
What I forget her name, the woman that has him up for rape in New York, the trial.
Jean Carroll.
She wasn't his type either, he said. And then they ran a photograph where you couldn't tell in that time period, you couldn't tell her from his wife, Marla Maples. They looked like twins. And, he's such a liar. Bill Maher did a piece where he said that, a comedy skit where he said, Trump is the only guy he knows that paid a porn star to keep her mouth shut.
These jokes write themselves. Right. So the issue, of course, in this particular instance is the money he paid her through Michael Cohen. And none of this, by the way, there's no contesting. Cohen paid Stormy Daniels, I forget how many, 60,000, I forget what it was, 130, I can't remember at the moment, 130. It was several payments. And then Trump paid Cohen. So Cohen will testify that that was hush money that he was supposed to pay to keep Stormy Daniels quiet. And then I guess Trump, he's going to have to testify if this comes to trial, that what? It was legal services that he was paying Cohen and hope that a New York jury believes him? This is not a jury in Alabama, ladies and gentlemen. This is a jury in New York City.
The defense that his current lawyer, Trump's current lawyer, is using is that Cohen did this on his own. Trump didn't even know about it. He just did it because he gave her the money because he wanted to impress Trump by doing him a favor.
Yeah. So I know that, MAGA voters in Lincoln Park might believe that, or MAGA voters in the Gold Coast might believe that, or MAGA voters on the Northwest and Southwest side might believe that. But, rational people, Monroe, who are not MAGA voters, will they fall for that?
No. Even the MAGA voters in Lincoln Park won't fall for it. They'll say they fall for it, but they're smarter than that. You know, I mean, if you stop and think about it, his defenses are so lightweight. So what they're doing now is the right wing. One of the things they're doing is saying, well, it's no big deal. You know, so he gave a little money. You know, he gave a little money. He's a billionaire, so $130,000 is nothing to him. And he did it because he loves his wife so much.
Yeah.
That he didn't want her to hurt her feelings or get her upset. But it has nothing to do with it. It was less than 2 weeks before the election. And he was still trying to recover from the I grab him by the pussy every chance I get.
Yeah, that he loves his wife so much. It's going to be a hard stand to hold to when you have Trump going around like he was in and Waco saying, well, she's not the one. She's not the one. Right. I have a worse imitation than Trump, too. I don't see people buying this at all. And so, Monroe, what's your latest prediction as to when this indictment will come down? It has not come down yet. Let me look and see. Hold on. It could. Nope. Has not broken yet.
First of all, this is a weak indictment because although Cohen already did time for the crime, what they're saying is that they have to prove with Trump that a crime was committed to move it up to a felony, because right now it's a misdemeanor. What he did, and if they hit him with a misdemeanor, then the Republicans are really going to do the witch hunt chant on that. So it has to be a felony, and in order for him to do it, it's a little complicated, but it's probably going to happen. Mm-hmm. But his greater danger, his for real danger, is in Georgia and in Mar-a-Lago with the documents.
Yeah.
And those two things are going to nail him to the cross.
Yeah. Well, we're concentrating on sort of the so bizarre, it's funny aspects of the Trump rally. But there was a lot of parts to it that were, for me anyway, kind of scary.
Now he's jumped the shark. He has gone so ugly and so anti-American and so vindictive. I mean, all the things that are not going to work for him in a general election. He can right as things stand right now, he can win the primary and be under indictment at the same time. But when it gets to the general election, it's going to be Republican blood all over the place from coast to coast in these states because of what he's doing and how he's doing it.
So, Monroe, we're out of time. The next time you come on this show, next Wednesday, it will be the day after Election Day.
Yes.
So let's get your final prediction. So at this time next week, will the mayor-elect be Brandon Johnson, Paul Vallis, or will it be too close to call? Monroe Anderson, your answer.
Too close to call.
Wow.
I think, but I don't, and you know how much I love going out on limbs, but I think I'm going to stay closer to the Trump on this one. But I have this feeling
that
Johnson has a momentum in his favor, and that he will squeak by. But that it all depends on turnout.
Yeah.
If the teachers union does a good job, and I think they will because they are voting for something. Whereas with the Vallis people, basically what they're voting for is that we put more black men in Cook County jail. But other than that, they don't care about it. And the taxes, of course, that Dallas is supposedly not going to raise.
By the way, folks, if there's anyone out there who actually believes that's so, you are seriously, you are really in a state of denial. Everybody is ripping Brandon Johnson for his alternative tax plans. That's across the board criticism he's getting. The reality is there are so many financial obligations that we face as a city, and we're adding to those because, well, in the case of Paul Vallis, he's promising to hire more police officers. So that's fine. If the city of Chicago wants to hire more police officers, that's where the voters want to go. That's what Vallis should do. He should, if he's elected, that's why he got elected. You think they're free? You think it's free? You don't.
Right.
There's pension obligations. You hear those? Your taxes are going up, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, Chicagoans are so clueless. Like, oh, he said he's going to hire more cops and lower taxes, Ben.
Okay, Ben. Let me point this out before we go.
Yeah.
That your favorite mayor, Richie, is responsible for this mess we're now in. When he first started doing this.
Yes.
I pointed out that he was killing the geese that laid the golden eggs.
Yeah.
He sold off parking. He sold off parking garages.
Mm. Skyway. Don't forget that.
Skyway, right. The Skyway. Yeah. All these streams of revenue that Vallis R. Johnson is going to need now or would be quite useful to them. Yeah. They're gone.
Yeah, they're gone, man. They're gone.
Of Daley selling them off.
Now, did you vote for Daley in the 90s, Monroe?
I've never voted for a Daley in my life, and I'm proud of it.
I must confess, I voted for Daley once. I just must confess, the year was 1984, and I voted for Daley over Richard Brezak for state's attorney because Brezak was running such an anti-Harold Washington. And look, only I would remember this, and only I would feel compelled. Honesty compels me to confess this.
I voted for the green candidate.
I'm not even sure there was a green candidate. You probably voted for Daley.
There was an alternative candidate.
Was there?
Okay. I wouldn't have voted for Brezak. Or maybe I just left it.
You could have left it blank.
I've never voted for Daley.
Yeah, I voted for him in 84. All right, I'll leave you with this. This just was sent to me by a friend of mine who is such a diehard Brandon Johnson supporter. I'm not going to name his name. This guy is really rooting for Brandon Johnson. He's going door to door for him. And he sends me this poll, this latest poll come out of Northwestern University. And here's the headline. Northwestern University polls show Chicago mayoral runoff election at statistical tie. Vallis and Johnson are at 44% and roughly 12% is undecided. And here's what my friend, the Johnson supporter, wrote. New Northwestern University poll has Johnson tied with Vallis at 44. Each new poll has Johnson gaining while Vallis is stuck in low to mid 40s. It's all field now. So like I always say, whoever I talk to last, that's where I go in predicting. So if it's good enough, my friend.
The momentum appears to be for Johnson.
Yeah.
But again, it's basically turnout.
It's turnout
going to make this decision.
And Monroe, I urge you to go walk down the streets of Lincoln Park and ask your neighbors who they're voting for. Who's?
Well, I know who they're voting for. Violence has moved up north. You know, as long as it was in the black community, they didn't give a damn. But now they might get robbed or they may be burglarized or carjacked or something. So suddenly they're concerned about it.
Well, as I like to say, pretty much every Monroe Anderson segment, the views and opinions of Monroe Anderson do not necessarily reflect those of the Ben Jarofsky Show. So Lincoln Park residents, send your complaints to Monroe or just go knock on his door. He lives in your neighborhood. All right. Thank you very much, Monroe. And thank you, Tiffany Walden. Outstanding job. And of course, must thank producer Chris for doing an outstanding job, as he always does. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Take care, everybody.
Don't forget, you can download previous Ben Jarofsky shows, get Benny J bonus interviews, and so much more at chicagoreader.com. And find more from The Ben Jarofsky Show all over the internet on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.